Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, February 27th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so, as we go over all kinds of in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as we keep this Bang the Book Radio train rolling right along. Had a great Monday edition with the Monday Mailbag and Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com, talking about all the conference tournament action that's coming up here over the next couple of days. On today's show, we'll open things up with Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio, and also Vegas Hockey Hotline, where a chat about the NHL trade deadline, take a look at some of the pretty big transactions that were made, some that maybe have altered the futures market a little bit, then take a quick look at the Tuesday night card. We got, looks like 9 or 10 games coming up here this evening, so we'll get, we'll get some thoughts from Brian on tonight's card. Second half of today's show, Tony George from Doc Sports will join us. He's a professional handicapper over there. We'll talk with him about the Missouri Valley Conference with Arch Madness coming up here on Thursday night. They'll also get some thoughts from him on the NBA card for Tuesday night. As a transition between segments here, I'll talk about everything we've got going on over at bangthebook.com. But I don't want to waste any more time bringing on today's first guest. That is Mr. Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam, how you doing, bud? It's a long, crazy day yesterday with the trade deadline. It was wild.
It really was a very crazy day yesterday, the trade deadline for sure, and then a crazy morning here for us. Things not working on our traditional Bang the Book Radio, Blog Talk Radio channel, so switching over to my private one to get today's segment done. So I have a little bit of a shorter segment with Brian because of some of those technical issues here this morning. But Brian, I think the biggest story of the trade deadline is actually a deal that was not made. Erik Karlsson stays with Ottawa. I'm sure he'll get traded over the summer. Are you surprised that they couldn't find a deal that worked out for them?
Well, the irony is, from people that are pretty trustworthy in terms of reporting, Vegas was knee-deep in the discussions with Ottawa, and Dory and McPhee, they got together, and it didn't come to pass. I guess the offer was going to be Vegas was probably going to put six pieces out there. My best guess would be it would have included Shea Theodore, two of the first three first-round draft picks they had last year, probably a couple of ones, and it didn't come to pass. And then at the last second, Vegas ended up with Tomas Tatar, and they gave up a first, a second, and a third for Tatar. He's a nice player, but that's a real juicy price they paid for him. I wonder at the last second if Holland kind of held McPhee's feet to the flame a little bit, but Vegas was very aggressive at the deadline, got Ryan Reeves and Tatar in the West. I think Nashville, I thought, was the best team in the West anyway. They pick up Hartman. They got better, plus Fisher's going to join them in the lineup. The other big story, you just sit there and you think Stastny from the Blues goes to Winnipeg, so having a great season, got even better down the middle. And then the huge mystery is, what was St. Louis thinking? It's like St. Louis threw up the white flag.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you here. I sort of wanted to go through and take a look at some winners and some losers here at the trade deadline. And, I think for Vegas, it's particularly interesting. I mean, we've talked about this situation that George McPhee faces here in terms of, do I go for it? Do I look to make a run? I've got a lot of expiring contracts, so is it better for me to move some of those, acquire some more depth, acquire some more draft picks? But they opted to go for it. I mean, and time will tell whether or not that was the right call for them. But what do you think? I mean, is this the route that they should have taken? Are they a winner, or are they, maybe a loser for not capitalizing on some of those James Neal, David Perron types of guys?
Well, that's going to be the $64,000 question. So you sit there and say, okay, they got Tatar and Ryan Reeves. McPhee gave his team what he thought it needed. Now, they lost last night. They were complete control of the game. Quick beat them. Quick played phenomenal last night. Kings tied it with 11 seconds left and won it in overtime. But the price that Vegas actually paid, when you think about it, is you mentioned Neal, Perron, Spezza. In addition to them giving up a first, a second, and a third, and a lot of money to get Ryan Reeves. So, if they go out in the first round, which can happen, there's no guarantees here, but they went for it. And the price will be next summer at the draft day or next year at the trade deadline. We sit there, man, what could Vegas have had they moved these guys? So they made a push for Carlson, left a lot of UFAs here. But I think the one thing they've got, Adam, that's going to be unique is every player that comes through here, they love the building, the atmosphere. There's no state tax here. The fact that this team is good out of the gate, and now Tatar coming in actually is part of the core moving forward because he had term on his contract. It moves things up, at least the schedule, in terms of getting involved with free agency, because they're going to have first pick of the litter. People are going to want to come here. The way, you know, whether it was worth the price, time's going to be the judge of that.
Well, and there were a few other teams that went for it here, and we knew that, you know, the New York Rangers were a seller. They made it very clear what their intentions were going to be. They had that open letter to their fans and said, you know what, look, this is the situation that we're in. This is the state that we're in. We're asking you to be patient with us. We're trying to get, you know, this organization back to the level that you expect it to be. So they made two significant trades here. One of them sending Rick Nash to the Boston Bruins. The other one was the huge package that they completed with the Tampa Bay Lightning, Ryan McDonagh and JT Miller going down to the Sunshine State. Rangers getting a whole boatload of prospects and assets in that deal. So Tampa Bay and Boston went for it. I mean, were these two deals that they needed to make? Should they have just kind of kept things the way that they were?
It's such a fine line. I mean, there's a debate out here. Back to Vegas for 1 second, that, you could have left well enough alone. And some people are saying, well, let's see how Reeves fits in from a speed perspective, but they needed grit and toughness. You know, you need a few games to see how this is all going to mesh. But there's a fine line where the GMs have to kind of be like a shrink, you know. I mean, you got to get between the ears of your players, leave the room alone, we all love each other and play hard for you, or the GM sits atop and watches practices and games and says they need something. McPhee's, just kind of a GM coach speak kind of thing, but it's one of the more telling quotes he made, and it was about 3 weeks ago. He said, every team has needs. If you don't think you have needs, you're getting complacent. So the other thing that happens at the trade deadline is, they can still move players up and down and move them around like chess pieces. But literally yesterday at 3 p.m. Eastern, that's the last chance that the GM has to put a stamp on his team. And then he literally turns the keys to the car over to the coach and says, it's on you now, man. Here it is. This is what you got to work with. So, some of these guys tinker, some leave alone, some are good at it, some aren't good at it, some make good trades, some make bad trades. History repeats itself. The next 10 days, for what we do, and we're sitting here watching these games, I think there's a little bit of a gray area to watch and see, what we're actually dealing with, because these teams are now constructed as they're going to be when April 8th arrives.
Now, a player that I know you're very familiar with from still following the Sabres from your time living there in Western New York, Evander Kane. So he winds up going to the San Jose Sharks. The Sabres get a conditional first, which I believe becomes a second if he doesn't re-sign, conditional fourth, and then also a young forward in Danny O'Regan. What do you think about this deal for San Jose? Obviously, this is one that could, have an impact on Vegas if these two teams do meet in the playoffs at some point, and that certainly could be a possibility here. Is Kane a good fit for the Sharks? Did they capitalize on their opportunity?
Well, I mean, at least in terms of a value perspective, San Jose fleeced Buffalo. Kane was the top guy out there for months, and then at the end it comes down to a second-round pick, a prospect, and a fourth. So, now, from San Jose's perspective, it's a great trade in terms of that. Apparently, guys in the room there did lobby. Wilson said they know Kane. Any concern with Kane is, will he fit in a locker room? So let's go on the premise that he does, because he was a good soldier in Buffalo this past year. His game has gotten better, and I'll say this to you, Adam. The first year and a half we've watched him with the Sabres, it was one of the most frustrating things to watch, that a guy with this speed, power, and skill, you pass the puck to him on the wing, and it's like, well, have a nice day. You're not getting it back. I mean, no matter what he did, he got it, he shot it from wherever he was. This past year, he did a much better job. I couldn't understand, why isn't that coachable? He did a much better job of passing it back to the middle and going to the net. So he started to utilize his teammates better. he's a unique talent. I mean, he can skate like the wind. Probably one of the best fighters in the league. Not that fighting's a thing anymore, but he goes to the front of the net, and you know, his effort has never been in question. That's the one thing, you know, when a hockey player, I think all you ever ask for is an honest effort, and this guy brings a solid effort every night. So, you know, how it fits, how it meshes remains to be seen. The one thing I'll say to you, Adam, is to go into the trade deadline last night, there's San Jose. You're sitting there, you're in second place in the Pacific Division, and, you know, you think you're in great shape. Well, you're in second place in the Pacific, but you're only 3 points away from playing golf in April. You're in second place in the Pacific, but you're only 3 points from ninth in the West.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, so at that point, you are certainly pressured a little bit to figure out a way to do something. And maybe Evander Kane is that guy. Maybe he's not. I know I saw from somebody on Twitter, and I'm trying to pick up the tweet here as we're talking. I can't really find it right now. But one of the things that San Jose does really, really effectively is create chances off of the cycle. And Evander Kane, per some of the advanced metrics that are out there, is one of the better players in the NHL this season at creating chances off the cycle. So in that regard, he should fit in pretty well for San Jose. And, you know, being able to play that cycle game in the playoffs and get a lot of attack zone time is something that works out really favorably for teams. And it worked out really well for San Jose when they had their run a couple of years ago. So, you know, maybe this does wind up being a good fit. And, you know, that sort of speaks to a whole other discussion here with regards to the trade deadline is, you know, teams pick up these players. Teams sometimes get a boost if they know that they're going for it, or, you know, they're thankful that the GM helped them out. Sometimes teams kind of think, well, you know, we'd have been better off without him. We got a pretty good rhythm going on. So, you know, one of the things I think is challenging to figure out here in the NHL is how long it actually takes these teams to come together and find some chemistry and find some line matchups that work.
Right. And basically you get about a 20 game window, and the big names that are out there, the blockbuster thing didn't happen. And it's probably a 50-50 proposition. And for the ones that worked, well, there are just as many that didn't. Shattenkirk comes to mind last year. But then there are those – we're going to focus on Hartman and, like you said, McDonough and those bigger names and guys like how that works in Winnipeg. But at the end of the day, it's the guys like a Bonino or a Maroon or Hagelin won a cup for Pittsburgh a couple of years ago when they acquired him. His speed – it got to the point when Pittsburgh won the cup 2 years ago, their third line was matched up against the other team's first line. And you're sitting there, all you're trying to accomplish that is just, you know, hold down the other team's number one line. Well, they didn't hold down the other team's number one line. They throttled them with team speed. So it's a third line guy that can make the difference. I mean, it's such a Rubik's Cube that, you know, well, let me get a little better idea here in the next week or so, you know, what these teams are about. But you know what? The reality of it, Adam, I say this all the time. The first round is the hardest round to win. And many people say that's crazy because they always say, well, you know, you get all the generic sound bites from guys in a series when their team's in an elimination. Oh, the fourth game's the hardest one to win. You got to win 16 games to win the Stanley Cup. There's great teams that lose in the first round. Everybody's fresh, for the most part, healthy. And you can get beat by a goaltender. Once you win that first round series, it's a belief that they can make a run. So, you know, the first round is always exciting, but it's also maybe the spot where you can really identify the team, go, man, look out, they look dangerous. This is a different team than they were 3 weeks ago.
You know, I think that one of the trades that sort of speaks to what you were talking about a lot of times, you know, it's that depth guy or that character guy or something like that. Mark Letestu being reunited with the Columbus Blue Jackets. He played a very fine game last night for them against Washington. You know, this is a guy that they relied on to win some important defensive zone faceoffs, a guy that was a pretty good penalty killer for them. And by the way, Columbus 27th in the NHL in penalty killing percentage right now. And those are the types of things that matter, because if you're taking minutes away from somebody that has to play on the penalty kill, giving them to somebody who's more of a fourth line guy, maybe that guy's a little bit better at even strength. Maybe he's a little bit more productive overall. So sometimes it is those types of under the radar types of moves more so than the impact deals like Shattenkirk. I don't know how Rick Nash is going to fit in with Boston. We'll have to wait and see how that one goes. But yeah, a lot of times it is those role player types of deals that, you know, do have a pretty significant impact. So we talked about some teams that have, go ahead.
That was just to check in because I I think it was last week, maybe it was the week before, and it was a video that I did of Bang the Book, and I said, you know, for Stanley Cup futures, you're looking for opportunities and some value, and I identified Anaheim about 5-6 weeks ago. I just said, listen, this is a team built for the playoffs, and there was 20-1 available on Anaheim. There was 35-1 on Columbus. And I thought we mentioned it on the podcast last week. If not, it was definitely in the video. I said, you know, a lot of people think Columbus had so much talent at the beginning of the year, and they just start flailing away and floundering. And so got them at 35-1. Well, they're back in now. They're sitting in the eighth seed, won a couple in a row. And everybody just gets so caught. I think I have a horse racing background. And I apply this to the sports handicapping as well, that you have to be willing to be forgiving to a degree. You can't be, you know, an idiot about it, but you have to. Sometimes a horse has a bad day, you draw a line through it. It's a bad day. Well, Columbus had a bad stretch. And, there's a team, once you're in, I don't care if you're eighth or you're first, but a guy like Letestu could be some little tiny piece of the puzzle that just changes the whole mindset. The guy makes a hit or he scores a goal or he does something that wakes everybody up around him. So again, you know, you're just looking for that. This is what we do, right, Adam? We're always in look ahead mode. Far too often, people are just too sucked into saying what's happened in the past, and you have to have the crystal ball. You got to try to project and say, hey, here's why that happened, but here's what I think can happen. It's like baseball. How many times do you see a baseball team, you know, go on an 11-game winning streak, and the players are, you know, going nuts, they're riding the streak. Well, the key is to get on board with the streak in the second game, not in the seventh game. You know, so it's always trying to be ahead of the curve.
Yeah, and actually, as I'm looking right now out at Five Dimes, Columbus is 80-1 to win the Stanley Cup. And as you mentioned, I mean, they're a team right now.
That is insane.
It is. It is. It's crazy. Even if they run into Tampa Bay, who is clearly a better team than them and would probably beat them pretty handily in the first round, that is a very easy hedge to take a Tampa Bay series price against that Columbus.
But you know, and I know that is not Golden State, sitting there playing Denver in the first round of the playoffs. You know, it's a hockey. There's a goaltender involved. You know, an 8 can beat a 1. An 8 can win the Stanley Cup.
No, yeah, I completely agree. I mean, if you get Columbus in there as an 80-1, I mean, you know, the possibilities are endless at that point. You basically are playing with house money and free rolling, because that's just an absurd number for a team that, you know, has a very good shot of getting in. I mean, as you mentioned, it's a team that does have a significant amount of talent. Brian, before I let you go here, real quick, anything you like on the Tuesday night card in the NHL?
Well, I tell you, it's a pretty healthy menu, and there's not a ton. The one I'm going to go with is Jersey and Pittsburgh, and the total's at 6.5. And it's basically, you know, how these two teams have been playing, can score and have moments in their own end where things get a little shaky. But you're looking at Kincaid and Casey DeSmith as the goaltenders tonight. So just on the goaltending premise alone, I think I'm going to take a shot with the over 6.5. And, again, you get the mini plus price there on that. They'll try to scare you off with the 6.5. And many players will just see the 6.5 and just won't go anywhere near it. But sometimes the number's telling you something. I do believe that's a higher scoring game.
Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and also Vegas Hockey Hotline. How can people listen to those two programs, Brian?
KSHP.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Brian Blessing. We did a 2-hour trade deadline show yesterday. It was a lot of fun. It's going to be a great push to the Stanley Cup playoffs. But we will literally, it's going to be a crazy March Madness when it comes here. Be on the road doing shows all around town that week. So we've got conference tournaments coming up, which I love. Championship week. It's a championship week now, I guess. Adam, I love the Metro Atlantic. I love the MAC. I love the smaller conference tournaments, and you get these teams and elimination games. It's every bit as much fun for me as the first 2 days of the NCAA tournament. It's a great time of year.
Well, then we'll make it a point to talk some conference tournament stuff next week on the show with you. Brian Blessing, you follow him on Twitter at Brian Blessing, and also check out his free pick videos over at bangthebook.com. Appreciate your time. Thank you so much for your patience this morning, and I'll talk to you again next week.
Oh, Hey, Adam, it's always a treat, bud. Look forward to it. Have a good week.
Good stuff there on today's show with Brian Blessing, again, the host of Sportsbook Radio and also Vegas Hockey Hotline out there in beautiful Sin City. With regards to the patience thing, we've had a very interesting start here to the morning with Bang the Book Radio. Was unable to get Brian to call in with our traditional channel. I'm recording on my channel that I pre-record on, and then I'll have to edit this and obviously post it over there on our bangthebook.com or on our Bang the Book Blog Talk Radio account. So thanks to Brian for being patient. He also bailed me out a couple of weeks ago with calling in on a Friday segment. So great guy, smart mind, good handicapper, definitely a good asset for us to have here on Bang the Book Radio and also at bangthebook.com. Speaking of bangthebook.com, tons of stuff going on over there at the website right now. I've got 12 conference tournament previews up for these college basketball conference tournaments. The A-Sun started, of course, on Monday, so you can still get some thoughts on the top two teams there, Florida Gulf Coast and Lipscomb, who both should wind up in that conference championship game. But we do have some conference tournaments that start here tonight on Tuesday night. The Big South starts tonight, and then also the Patriot League starts tonight. Tomorrow, you've got the Ohio Valley, the Northeast Conference, the Big Ten as well. We talked about all of those on yesterday's show with Kyle Hunter. As I mentioned in the intro today, we will have Kyle Hunter back on the program tomorrow for another hour of time. So we'll chat about other conference tournaments that start this week, like the America East, the Colonial, the Horizon League, the MAAC, which Brian just talked about. We'll chat some Missouri Valley with him, although we'll also do that in our next segment with Tony George. The SoCon starts on Thursday. The Summit starts this weekend. West Coast starts on Thursday as well. That one out there, excuse me, in Las Vegas. So I have a full show chatting conference tournaments with Kyle tomorrow, also doing some conference tournament stuff and a little bit of WGC Mexico with Wes Reynolds. Thursday, we'll have Brad Powers. I'm going to see what I'm going to do about Thursday and Friday here because I'll be doing one of those studio quality recordings on Wednesday with Brad. That may be my full show on Thursday, and then we'll try to get Rolf Michaels on Friday. I'll figure something out to that effect, but we'll definitely hear from both of them here this week, but they may not both be on that Thursday show. I don't want to waste that studio quality recording. So because I'm just recording with Brad during that, you know, that may end up being our Thursday show. I'll talk to Rolf about maybe figuring something else out for Friday, but you know, it's been a very busy week here. I'm still writing my MLB season win totals. 10 of those are up so far over at bangthebook.com. Going to be posting the AL West here this afternoon, so we'll have the entire American League up, and I'll start with the National League East probably on Thursday. I've got two teams left to finish. I got about 1.5 teams left to finish in the NL Central. I'm working on Pittsburgh right now. St. Louis, I hope to start either later today or tomorrow. Then the NL West will come at that point. Should have all of these up, I would say, by maybe the weekend, certainly early next week with the NL West being the last division that I put up. But it is very important. I want you to keep this in mind as we're looking around right now and seeing, you know, Marcus Stroman dealing with some shoulder discomfort. Yuli Gurriel's got a hand problem for Houston. You know, a lot of bad things can happen in spring training. Spring training, generally good things don't happen. You know, maybe you get a guy who's refined a new pitch or something like that, and Jeff Sullivan and Jason Collette are doing a great job of tracking those on Twitter. But a lot of times all you really have in spring training are injuries. And those are things that can obviously hurt a team long term. And especially you talk about, you know, even something like an oblique at this time of year for a pitcher, something like that, where they have to be shut down for a month. Then once April rolls around, they have to go to the minor leagues, build their arms up. You're talking about maybe late May for a pitcher that suffers an oblique injury at this stage of the game. And typically that's a 6-week thing. But because you've got pitchers that are building up their arms, you know, it becomes a much longer, arduous process and something that can really hurt a season win total play. So my tip with regards to season win totals, and I talked about this on last week's show, is if you want to play an under, you're probably okay to play that right now, unless it's a team that's going to see its win total line go up, at which point you want to wait. But if you want to play an over, you have to wait and make sure that team is as healthy as possible going into opening day. And we've got another 4 weeks left of spring training games and associated practices and stuff like that to where, you know, really only bad things can happen at this point with a lot of these players, with a lot of these teams. So it is certainly in your best interest to hold off as long as possible in playing these season win totals. So I'm putting them up. I'm getting some eyes on them. I'm going to put them together in that PDF ebook format as well. But for those that are out there you know, trying to dabble in that season win total market, make sure that you're exercising both caution and patience, because it's going to be so very important for you to get through spring training healthy, to know what you're working with, to know what you're dealing with in terms of a lot of these teams. So, you know, for those that are looking to dabble in any kind of futures from a baseball standpoint, you know, again, you certainly want to exercise as much caution, as much patience as possible. And look, guys are still getting signed. You know, the Blue Jays just signed O, the reliever from the St. Louis Cardinals for the last couple of years. You've got Jake Arrieta still out there on the marketplace. You've got J.D. Martinez finally now signed by Boston. He's finally in camp, participating in practices and all those types of things. And you still got some guys that need to be signed. You still have a lot of injury possibilities that are out there. So, again, exercise caution, be careful, pay attention to everything that's going on out there in the marketplace, because it's so very important for you to make the most informed wager possible. And that's why I go through and write over 3,000 words per team. I want to make sure that you have all of the information in front of you that you need. But then also, you know, it helps my own handicapping, and it helps us on a player-by-player basis to, you know, be able to see what these teams are going into the regular season with and see where some of those losses could wind up being even more significant. And, you know, again, when you think about it, it is something where it's a long-term investment, and you want as much information as possible. You know, once your bet is out there, it is what it is, and there's probably not a whole lot that you can do differently about it. But until that bet goes out there, you know, you can still compile research, you can still compile information, you can do all those different things that you need to do in order to, you know, make smart decisions, make informed decisions, do a lot of those types of things that keep you ahead of the curve. So, again, I'm writing those season win totals. They're a great feature over there at bangthebook.com. But don't go overboard. Don't go crazy. Make sure that you're exercising the right amount of caution and doing the things that you need to do to make the most informed wager possible. Also over at bangthebook.com, daily NBA, college basketball, golf, NASCAR, UFC, NHL, so much going on over there. We are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Check out those free contests that we have where you can win some cash prizes. Also, take a look at our sportsbook reviews. You know about that promo code over at DSI Sportsbook. $25 free bet for signing up. 100% deposit match bonus for both the sportsbook and the live casino. If you sign up with that code BTB and the number 25, maybe you don't want to sign up at DSI. Maybe you already have an account over there. You can try out some of the other sportsbooks that we are affiliated with, some of our other reviews that are posted over there, Five Dimes, Bet Online, Bookmaker, Bovada, GT Bets, Viet Bet, Bet Any Sports, Galaxy Sports. The list goes on and on. Heritage, you know, if you are outside the U.S., you've got access to a place like Pinnacle or Bet365 or BetCris. You know, those are all options that are available for you. And we do grade those sportsbooks over there at bangthebook.com. We've got, we're reworking our forum. That's something that we're hoping to get back up here in a few weeks' time, something that will be new and improved for people that like to check that out. Our matchup data section, there's a lot of good stuff there as well. So, you know, we truly are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information over at bangthebook.com. And if there's ever anything that you want us to cover, if you think there's some sort of interesting angle, you know, I know I've had some listener questions here the last couple of days wondering if any of my guests handicap, you know, cricket or international baseball or the G League or stuff like that. You know, right now, know if it's something that you're interested in. We're always looking for writers at bangthebook.com. So if you are following it, if you are doing some research and studying and all that type of thing, and maybe you want to contribute a little bit to the website, that is something that you can do. There's something where you can send us a writing sample and we can decide, you know, if it's something that we think is a good fit for us. And, you know, I mean, look, every market where you can gain an edge is valuable. Every market where you can look to, you know, get some sort of advantage over the odds makers is an endeavor worth pursuing. And just because our guests don't do it, and because we don't have, you know, it's not something that I really have the time to do with everything that I'm doing otherwise. But, you know, if you're finding edges, if you're having success in those types of markets, by all means, you know, please pass along that type of information, share it with people. You know, obviously get your action in first, because I'm sure those are markets that do tend to move pretty quickly. They're not the most efficient markets in the world by any means. But, you know, hey, if you're finding edges, take advantage of them. You know, Big Ten Watto doing some great tennis work for us over there at the website. You know, tennis is not a market that I dabble in a whole lot, not a market that I know a whole lot about in general. But again, if you can find these values, if you can find these edges, doesn't matter if it's tennis, G League, WNBA, arena football, you know, women's college basketball, high school football, doesn't matter. Whatever the market is, if you're finding edges, make sure you capitalize on them. And if you want to contribute something like that to bangthebook.com, we're always interested in writers that may have some interest in those fields. One more guest coming up here on this Tuesday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is Tony George, professional handicapper from Doc Sports. Tony, how's it going today, man?
Well, it's a rough Tuesday here. I know you had some technical difficulties, and of course, I live in a neighborhood where Time Warner decided to cut off all the internet for some reason. So I'm kind of like a blind squirrel trying to find a nut today when it comes to giving you a lot of great statistics for your listeners. And on top of all that, I had my college basketball game of the year last night on Duke. And anybody that watches college basketball watched that game last night. So we grabbed defeat from the jaws of victory in the Duke game last night. And so kind of a tough morning here all the way around coming from Kansas City.
It certainly is a tough morning. Go get yourself some comfort food after the show. I know we talked about Q39 and we talked about Joe's KC over there. Get yourself some comfort food. Maybe it'll improve your day. I know it would certainly help mine out. But, you know, hey, at least there's one nice thing here. I know you don't have the internet working, but you know the Missouri Valley Conference. You know it very well. It's a conference that you follow inside and out. And Arch Madness begins here on Thursday night at the Scott Trade Center. And, Tony, this is a particularly interesting year for this tournament because we don't have the heavy favorite in Wichita State.
No, it's still a top-heavy conference, though. As much as the names have changed, it's kind of the same deal because Loyola Chicago obviously is the cream of the crop. They're the best team in this conference by a long shot, in my opinion. But it makes it very – I've went 8-1 in this conference over the past two seasons in the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament. And I will be going down to St. Louis to this tournament. I do every year. And staying with a friend down there who's a Mo Valley nut who kind of helps me with this conference, actually. He's just one of those type of guys that digs into it. And he's an Illinois State grad, but nonetheless, I don't hold that against him. But at the end of the day, it's one of these conference tournaments here, and there's a lot of them where you see in these mid-majors one or two really good teams and then a bunch of teams that are damn near dead even, that anybody can beat anybody on any given day. There's a lot of parity involved in a lot of these mid-majors, you know, past maybe the top one or two teams. And that's what you have here with the Missouri Valley this year. Outside of Loyola Chicago, you know, you really don't have a lot of clear-cut favorites. You know, on either side of the coin, it's going to be, for lack of a better term, I wouldn't call it a crapshoot, but it's who's going to show up. And, you know, there's a couple of different angles you can look at for something like that. But at the end of the day, you know, this one here is Loyola Chicago's to lose. I think they're good enough to make the NCAA tournament if they don't win the Missouri Valley, you know, tournament itself, because they're the regular season champion here by a relatively wide margin. They have a road win, and lest we forget, this is a team that can win on the road. This is a team that beat Florida down in Gainesville early in the non-conference schedule. They've got a big, you know, that's their big, you know, plus on the resume. And also don't forget, this is the number two ranked team in the nation in field goal percentage and top 10 in shooting three. So, you know, they can get after it offensively in a big hurry here, Adam.
Well, and what you talked about in terms of parity, if we want to call it parity, we can call it inconsistency, we can call it whatever the hell we want. But beyond Loyola Chicago, who is the tournament favorite here, Five Dimes has them plus 105. And actually, when I posted my preview yesterday, they were plus 120 to win this league. So somebody has taken a little bit of a piece of Loyola Chicago here. The number two favorite on the board, and this is a distant number two, is Bradley at plus 635. Bradley is the 5 seed in this tournament, which is also interesting because in the semifinals, they would run into Loyola Chicago. So you know, they're not even a team that could play Loyola Chicago in the championship game. They'd have to beat them to get to the championship game. So it's a surprise to see them at plus 635. The number 2 seed, Southern Illinois, is plus 650. Illinois State, the number 3 seed, is plus 700. Missouri State, who is the number 7 seed in this tournament, comes up next on the board at plus 800. Indiana State, little more than 10-1. Northern Iowa, 12-1. Drake, 13. Valpo, 14. Evansville, 24. So that kind of speaks to what you're talking about there. Well, Loyola Chicago, almost an even money favorite right now. Then you kind of have your pick of the litter at 6-1 or higher of who you think plays them and has the chance to beat them.
Yeah, it's you know, I start looking at these tournaments when there's this much parity. And the one thing I like to look at, for lack of a better term, is teams that play really good defense, you know, and maybe somebody that has a really good player that can get hot. And a couple of teams come to mind here. And Southern Illinois, sitting at second in this conference, they're, you know, they're 19-12 basketball team overall. But a couple of teams that raised my eyebrow a little bit here are Evansville and Missouri State. And I think what you're going to have to do in this tournament is better to look at this on a game-to-game basis than an overall. The only bet I'm going to make, and I did make a small wager, was Loyola Chicago to win it. But, you know, at the end of the day, you got to take a look. The best player in the Mo Valley, bar none, And I'm including Clayton Custer, who plays for Loyola Chicago. He's an Iowa State transfer. They're 23-2 with him playing, and they're 2-3 without him playing. And he is playing in this tournament. But the best player is Ryan Taylor in the Missouri Valley. No one's ever heard of him, you know, outside of following Missouri Valley. But he averages 22 points a game, and he plays for Evansville, who, despite their scoring and this, that, and the other, They're 11th in the country in three-point percentage from the floor, and he's a big reason why. So, and they play some good defense there as well. And also, bear in mind, throughout the record, we're doing this against the spread, not straight up. Evansville is second best in this conference behind Loyola Chicago against the spread. They play everybody tight. They've had a lot of injuries early in the season that really cost them. They're a 16-10 spread team. They play good defense. And so that's one of my dark horses here, as well as Mo State. You take a look at Missouri State. They were one of the odds-on favorites, you know, early dark horses to win this conference. They did not have a good year. But at the end of the day here, 34th in the country in points allowed. They're 26th, you know, and I'm talking defense now. And that's what I want to look at, concentrate on in this conference tournament. Teams that play good defense, and Missouri State's very good at playing defense. 34th in the country in points allowed, 26th in field goal percentage allowed, and 46th in three-point range. And it's interesting because the Thursday slate is Evansville, Northern Iowa, and Valpo and Mo State. So both these teams I'm talking about here are going to open up this tournament on Thursday night. First game's at 7, next game's at 9. I think Evansville, Northern Iowa is one of those games there. And bear in mind, this is going to be a snooze fest. So if you don't like defense, don't watch this game, because the last time they played, it was a 41-47 final. And the total in that game, I believe, was I wrote this down before my internet went out, was 119 points. And they were well under that. So I'd probably be looking at unders in both these games. And I know that last time Valpo and Mo State played, they finished double digits under the number as well. So might be looking at more of a totals angle versus against the spread angle, because I tell you, Adam, this is going to be pretty volatile.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, this is a conference we did talk about with Kyle Hunter yesterday, and the Scott Trade Center, generally pretty good for unders. And some of that has to do with the way that these teams play, but also, you know, for a lot of these teams, I mean, they go from playing in barns that seat maybe 7,000 or 8,000 people. to playing in a hockey arena that seats, what, 18, 19, 20,000 there at the Scott Trade Center. So it's a much different type of atmosphere, a different type of environment for these teams. So I know that you said you go to this tournament every year. You're 8-1 in this conference tournament in terms of selections that you've released. What are you looking for as you're watching it live? What types of things do you look for in-game that you can carry over to the next matchup?
The play of the guards. That's backcourts. I want to see whose guards are playing in tandem, you know, who's able to push the ball up the floor with the guards and try and dictate some pace. You know, and that's one thing that you know, Wichita State and Creighton were so good at over the years was the fact that they were, you know, they were able to have great guard play and push the pace. And I think teams that have more up-tempo rhythm to them tend to do a lot better in this tournament because the guards are going to lead the way. I mean, you got to have guys, that, like you said, you go from Bradley, you know, the barn at Bradley to this huge arena. You know, it's just a different it's a different optic, I guess, for lack of a better term, for these guards shooting in small arenas and going to big arenas. It just is bigger. It takes some while to get warmed up, get going. So that's the number one thing I look for, is just good guard play on both ends of the floor. And then, of course, secondary, I look for good defenses, teams that can really match up, you know, play good zone defense. And there's a lot of good defensive teams in this league. This is a defensive-driven league. But yet, that's why Loyola Chicago has done so well, is they've got great guard play, and they push the ball up and down the floor. Teams try and take them out of that rhythm, you know, and force them to play a half-court, you know, offense, which gets them in the realm of a team like, you know, Evansville, Northern Iowa, you know, Missouri State, you know, Bradley's another one. Bradley plays good defense. You know, they had 19 under games this year. If I'm and I don't have my internet, so don't quote me, but I think it was 19 on the unders out of 29 games. So, you know, those type of teams there, if they're able to push the pace on them, they tend to pull away from them quickly. So that's those are the two things I really look for, though, how they're playing defense, and then, of course, the guard play is – and that, really, it's – no big secret there, Adam. I mean, you look for good backcourts, you know, in tournament time. Those teams usually prevail, you know, even the big schools when you get to the Dukes and the North Carolinas and, you know, all these other schools, you know, Virginia, you know, some of these schools that are up there this year, they got great guard play. So the teams with the best guard play here are probably going to prevail.
All right, here's something I would like you to speculate on a little bit. You know, you have gone to this tournament, I don't know how many years in a row, but it seems like it is something that you do, you know, make a yearly pilgrimage for without Wichita State. And you know, locals in St. Louis are going to be like, you know what, I'll go watch Wichita State. You know, they're one of the better teams in the country. They're a team that's usually, you know, one of the top 10 or 15 to win the NCAA tournament. So people that maybe didn't go to any one of these schools, you know, maybe they're going to go and check out Wichita State just to say, you know, hey, we saw the Shockers, and you know, it probably drums up a lot more interest. This year, they don't have Wichita State. And so I'm kind of curious what you think the crowd dynamics might be like here, because this is a big venue, going to be a lot of open seats, certainly in the early rounds. You know, maybe as we get a little bit later into the tournament, get into Saturday and Sunday, maybe some people start to come in that are alums of these particular institutions. But, you know, what do you think that the crowd is going to be like here, you know, without a big draw like Wichita State?
Yeah, and I'm not familiar with Loyola Chicago that well and how feverish of a fan base they have. It's about a 4 or 5 hour road trip down from Chicago. But you're right. You know, Creighton and Wichita State, first of all, both those schools traveled extremely well when this Arch Madness was going on up until their departure. Southern Illinois is located very close to St. Louis. They always garnered a lot of public support. There's a lot of Southern Illinois fans in the St. Louis area. You know, you look at Drake, you know, Des Moines, that's, you're driving down from Des Moines, that's a 4 hour road trip, basically 4.5 hour road trip. But I don't think it's going to be near the venue that it has been in the past. And a lot of that is there's just not as sexy, like you mentioned, Wichita State, Creighton up until a couple years ago. Those are sexy picks. You know, those are sexy teams that usually both of them would make the NCAA tournament, even if Creighton did win it, Wichita State did, or vice versa. You had Dane Altman coaching there at Creighton before he went to Oregon, and all these different dynamics with both these teams, and they were a big draw and an interest. And this year you buy your seat, you get your seat assignment, and I always go cheap because basically at the end of the day, you know, when you get to the game, there's 1,800 people there. You can practically sit at midcourt, you know, 20 rows up, and there's no one comes up and says, "Hey, what's your ticket say?" You know, and that's the way it was last year. And so that's kind of what I always do. So it's going to be – I don't think there's – it's – some of these, you know, like these games on Thursday night, it's going to be like going to a high school basketball game. If there's 1,500, 2,000 people in the crowd, you know, Missouri State's got a good following down in Springfield, but now you're talking about a 4.5-hour drive, you know, on a Thursday night, you know, 9 o'clock game. You know, you're just not going to draw a lot of fans and students for something like that, especially when they got school the next day and everybody's got to work. So I don't think there's going to be any big crowds at this. Maybe the final game on Sunday, there could be, you know, upwards of 8,000 or 9,000 people there, but it would shock me if it was any more than that.
So from a betting standpoint, man, do you think that gives us any kind of edge? I mean, it's going to be a very subdued environment in a massive arena. I mean, do you think that we may see unders do even better this year? Because they're just – I mean, the teams will be excited and the teams will have some adrenaline because they want to go to March Madness. And without Wichita State, this is their best shot to do it in years. But also at the same time, like, there's just going to be no buzz in that building at all. So you know, the teams will be forced to generate all the excitement. Maybe the unders, you know, are an especially good way to look this year.
Yeah, they will be. I agree with that statement 100%. You know, I think they're the teams tend to play to their strength in the postseason. You know, South Carolina last year in the Big Dance, you know, they got all the way to the Final Four. They didn't get it with flashy offense. They got it with playing, you know, Frank Martin, hard-nosed defense. And the only way that any of these teams are going to have a chance in this ball game is to slow it down and play good defense, work the ball in a half-court offense, take good shots, run the shot clock down to, you know, 5 or 4 seconds before they take a shot. And I can tell you that I expect to see a lot of defense. I don't see a lot of teams scoring in excess of 70 points in any game. I think Loyola Chicago might be able to do it. Indiana State's another team that's kind of came on here towards the end of the season and have played some good basketball. And they've kind of changed their offensive philosophy, their offensive tempo in their last 10 games has almost doubled, you know, in points per possession and what they're doing. You know, that maybe that's a way that we can win. But at the end of the day, I think it's going to be just a lot of good defense. And I guess you got about 12, you know, they got 10 teams here. You got nine teams or so that are going to try to figure out how they can slow down, you know, Loyola Chicago if they get a shot at them. You know, but I will guarantee you Thursday night between Evansville and Northern Iowa and Valpo and Mo State, I'll be shocked if either one of those go over the total. You'll want to take a look. I don't have, like I said, I don't have my internet here today, but you want to take a look at those games and those totals and what the first game total was and see what the odds makers adjustment is to the second game total. And because both these went under by double digits in the last game. And even when that happens, you see a lot of these odds makers don't make a huge adjustment. I'll give you an example. Just tonight, I have a free play on YouTube over there. You can go over to YouTube and type in Tony and George at Doc Sports, see my video. But I talk about the Oklahoma-Baylor game. First time they played, 194 points, and the total was 153 tonight, 153.5. The total tonight's 157. You know, they were, I don't know how many, 40-some points over the total, yet odds makers, you know, continue to just they added 3.5 points to that total. They don't have a there's a lot more adjustment with the side than there are the totals a lot, and I'm finding more value and more winners this year for me, myself personally, and my clients with totals plays. So it'll be interesting to see what those adjustments were on those total plays in those Thursday night games, and if there's not a lot of adjustment, there might be some real value in taking the under.
I want to spend just a couple of minutes here on the NBA, and I know that obviously both of us kind of working a little bit shorthanded, excuse me, here today with the show screwing up on me, the internet out for you. But as we look at the NBA card here tonight, Cleveland favored by 10.5 over Brooklyn, Charlotte by 10.5 over Chicago, Portland by 11.5 over Sacramento. The other three games, Philadelphia, Miami came out a pick, went to Philadelphia -1. Now it's back to Miami +1 at some shops, or Miami -1, excuse me. Milwaukee's a 3-point favorite. Denver's a 4.5-point favorite. This is kind of what we see now in the NBA, Tony, where you've got, you know what, you got about half the games on the card with huge double-digit numbers. The other half, you know, reasonable NBA types of numbers. What is your inclination here at this time of the year? I mean, would you rather play the games where you've got a couple of teams that are closer together where you can kind of, you know, get a better gauge for how the game may go? Or do you like to try to look at some of those big spreads and you look at the teams that are allegedly tanking and try to find edges that way?
Well, you know, first of all, Cleveland has no business playing double digits to anybody in basketball. In the NBA, Cleveland, I don't know how hard. Look, they're locked in probably about a 2 or 3 seed, probably a 3 seed. That's probably where they're going to remain. So I don't know how much effort you're getting out of Cleveland against Brooklyn tonight, and I don't have the numbers in front of me. I know that Cleveland's the worst ATS spread team in the NBA, and Brooklyn's one of the better ones. You know, and you know, I tend to stay away from. I had a small lean last night on the Knicks getting all those points against Golden State because of, you know, what they're doing and who they're playing. But, you know, when I see double-digit spreads and I see a team A, you know, Cleveland, San Antonio, Golden State, you know, Boston, you know, these teams like that playing weak sisters, you know, what you want to do when you're looking at that point spread, say, boy, that looks really easy. What you want to do is look up the next couple of days' schedule and see who they're playing next. You know, and I thought Golden State might, and they were down at halftime last night, actually. They just crushed New York in the third quarter. But that being said, they were down at halftime by a point. You know, well, they had Washington on deck. Big game with Washington Wizards on Wednesday. You know, now they came in and, you know, did what they had to do there towards the end of the game. But I tend to look at those type of games like that and see who they're playing next before I even think about unloading on a favorite. I tend to stay more, you know, in the games where there's 3 or 4 or 5 points, you know, a difference. I like to find, you know, home underdogs catching 4 or 5 points, you know, home teams won almost 70% of the time in the first half of the season. Whenever you're catching a home team with any more 3 or 4 points, you know, you might want to take a look at them. You know, it didn't work out last night for you know, Utah backers, but the game was low scoring, but, you know, Houston still covered the number. But I tend to find the smaller spreads, and I also tend to see who's been scoring well in the second half out of the gate here, whether the four games out of the four, three, anywhere from 3 to 4 games, you know, teams have played in the break here out of the All-Star break. And, you know, it's like tonight, I know I had worked these this morning. A couple that jumped off the page at me was, you know, Washington on the road at Milwaukee tonight. They're catching 3 points. They've got Golden State on deck tomorrow. They're off a big, huge win against Philadelphia. I think that was on Sunday again. It was on Sunday, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, it was on Sunday. And I kind of think there that they may have a little bit of a letdown. So that's a hell of a sandwich game for them, you know. And although they've been a pretty decent road team this year, you know, I know Milwaukee's got their 8 or 9 games over 500 at home this year. And that might be a tough spot for them based on the scheduling deal. So more so than, I guess, it's a long-winded answer for you, But at the end of the day, I tend to look at the scheduling spot and who's on deck next for both teams. But I think one of the biggest ones that jumped off the board at me this morning, although I'm on a totals play today, but one of the biggest ones that jumped off on me was Milwaukee tonight, only laying 3 at home against a team that's got a huge game tomorrow night, and they're off a huge game. And it's all about scheduling in the NBA.
Yeah, it really is. And I think that's a very important lesson for our listeners to take away here from this segment, which has been a strong one with Tony George from Doc Sports. And Tony, whenever you get your internet back, what do you guys got going on over there?
Oh, well, I've got to bounce back tonight off that big loss on Duke last night. That was just something that I'm still not over it. You know, I have a lot of clients, and when you have a big game out like that and you lose it, you really feel it. You know, I had somebody on it personally, trust me. And today we bounce back. We go back to our strength. The totals play in a small conference, which I've been very good at this year. And the Tennessee and Mississippi State game interested me tonight, so I've got a side play in that game. And the NBA, I tell you what, we came in the NBA break at them 20-8 and plus 60 units on the year. And I, you know what, I tell it like it is here. I don't blow smoke up anybody's ass. I opened up the second half here 1-4. So I've got to bounce back tonight. I've got a totals play tonight in the NBA that I think is about 10 points off the mark. So we're going to go ahead and make a move there in the NBA side on a totals play and stay away from the side play and some of these crazy results that are happening.
Well, you can always follow Tony. Excuse me. I don't know why I can't talk today. Nothing's working today. I guess it's just one of those days. You can always follow Tony on Twitter at TJordanSports and then check out that YouTube page for some of his free picks. Tony, appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining me, man. I know it was a little bit of a tough segment, and I'll talk to you again next week.
You betcha.
Good stuff there today with Tony George, professional handicapper over at Doc Sports. Coming up on our Wednesday edition of Bang Book Radio, we'll chat with Wes Reynolds and Kyle Hunter, as I mentioned earlier on in the segment. Then we'll see how things play out over the next couple of days, hopefully with fewer bumps in the road. The last thing I need certainly is any sort of technical difficulties with the show with everything that's going on from a writing standpoint. But it is what it is. I think we soldiered through it and got through a pretty good edition here today of Bang Book Radio. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.